Hi, everyone. I'm Laurel Simmons, and this is another episode of the Write Club podcast. Today, my co-host is Andrew Signet. And Andrew, today's guest is Roy Budgell. And wow, he's got some really cool information to share with us, doesn't he?
Oh, I'm excited for this guest. He's had years of experience in the commercial property management. He's had some very big titles at some big firms in downtown Toronto. And he is a wealth of knowledge on how to maximize your asset, your yield on your assets. So I'm excited for this guest.
Yeah, it's really worth listening to. I, you know, even take a few notes because he's got some great tips, great points. And I learned a lot. So that's great. So everyone, let's go listen to the interview. But just before we do, just want to remind everyone that you can go to therateclub.com. All kinds of great information there for you. Hundreds, about thousands of hours of videos and podcasts and all kinds of stuff. So it's a great resource for you. And now let's go to the interview.
Welcome to the Write Club podcast, where the focus is on helping you, the real estate investor, advance to the next level. And now let's join this week's hosts and share ways for you to customize your life.
Hi, Roy, and welcome to the Write Club podcast. It's great to have you on as a guest.
It's great to be here.
So we're going to get right into it. And what is the most overlooked area in your field when it comes to saving money in and on real estate? Because that's what you do, right? You help a lot of people save money.
Mm-hmm. It's probably the acquisition to 2030, 2050 being the net zero requirements in the industry. We've have everybody replacing equipment for like, but nobody's looking at the longer picture. It's only starting now. The government of Canada has actually launched a new program wherein you can go in and get a certificate for low carbon training. So we're getting on the bandwagon, but we're not quite there yet. We need a lot more landlords to hop on this so that we can meet our 2030 and 2050 goals.
Okay, so can you expand on that a little bit? Like, how exactly do you help landlords do this? I mean, aside from the carbon, there's a lot we could talk about here. But, you know, you are in property management and you help landlords. And what are some of the things that you see as the most important, perhaps, and then maybe the easiest? Let's start with the most important and then we can do the easiest things.
The most important are your equipment that gives off CO2. So your boilers and anything that uses up natural gas is a big one. Oil, unfortunately, you cannot change the diesel tanks on your emergency generators. Thankfully, they only activate when they're in emergency. But anything that derives CO2 from the building is something that you want to try and either diminish or completely eradicate from the property. And you can do this in several ways. You can, low-hanging fruit would be to get the lighting and replacement of T5s and T8s, which the industry has mostly done. There's new technology out like destination dispatch on elevator banks, which decrease usage by 20 to 40% depending upon the building and the use. And then, of course, there's the replacement of actual equipment, which is something that I'm in the process of doing at my properties here. So replacing boilers with electric boilers as opposed to gas burning boilers is a fantastic example because you're not burning fossil fuels at the site. And Ontario's grid is predominantly green. We're actually doing very well. So those are the areas that I would recommend and that I would look into.
That's a really interesting point. A couple of questions regarding that. When did Canada start making a push to achieve net zero?
That would be 2003 is when we started. Every one of the accords that we've been participating in, we've made commitments, but we haven't met them. And we're doing the same thing right now. We're not getting close to the commitments that we've made. And the industry really is starting to step up. But I think the push now for 2030 is getting a little closer than people realized. And it's causing a lot of forward momentum, shall we say.
That's awesome to hear that landlords are starting to make a push and that the government is starting to give incentives. When you're looking to upgrade and purchase equipment for a property, what are some of the hurdles that you face when buying those pieces of equipment?
The biggest hurdle really is to do your analysis ahead of time. So you have a consultant, usually an engineer, making recommendations. You have your HVAC vendor who would be, again, making recommendations. And you also have something that is, it's quite a process, which is the incentive program that's currently offered by IESO and other like-minded companies out there who give rebates based on the amount of savings that you get or the amount of CO2 that you do not put into the atmosphere. So I would say most would be the incentive program would be the most difficult thing to get through because it's a lot of paperwork. And you definitely need a consultant to do that.
Okay, so you are talking about big apartment buildings, right? Like, how big?
I'm talking about commercial centers, condos, any size of an apartment building that uses a central plant. Any building, really. The size is irrelevant. It's the amount of CO2 that they spill out to the atmosphere that's important. And most residential buildings have boilers, natural gas, as we're moving over to electric. But yeah, it's relevant for any building, even your house, if you want to go down to that size.
Okay, because I guess what I'm wondering is that, and I know that there's people listening to this who are going to be saying, well, wait a minute, I only have an 8-unit apartment building. It doesn't make financial sense for me to do this because there's a significant outlay, isn't there, as you go along to try to do this?
There is a significant outlay, but there's also a significant incentive put out by Enbridge or, as I said, many of the suppliers. They will give you rebates in order to switch over, as does the government of Canada. They all have rebate programs when you upgrade to green technology, or greener technology, which would be switching over from natural gas to electric boilers, as the example.
Okay. And as you said, even if you're a residential home, just your own home, you could do this. Now, there are incentives, I believe. I mean, I haven't looked at it. I mean, I confess, in my home, I've not done this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're on natural gas, as is every other house in this neighborhood. So there are, I guess, programs for people to do that too, correct?
Well, through the government of Canada, you can get a rebate program for the installation of a heat pump into your house, which is probably the best option for anybody that's in residential, small residential. The boilers, it's again, the government of Canada, Enbridge Gas, it's varied. You just have to make the application. Homeowners are not so bad if it's a single home. It's an easy application. You simply go into the Government of Canada website, fill out the application, start the work, make sure that you don't pay them until you get the incentive calculated and the approval made, and then away you go.
Talking about electric boilers, that is not a common actual piece of equipment. How is the technology on electric boilers? And where do you see it going in the future?
I don't know where it's going to go in the future, quite frankly. But I do know that the efficiency of boilers has increased dramatically. We replaced our 83% efficiencies with almost 97%. So it's pretty dramatic, the changes that have been made in the technology over the last 10, 15 years. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Okay. So that's a significant change. So boilers are one thing. Now that's heat. That's not, well, I was thinking air conditioning, HVAC, but that's generally run on electric anyway, isn't it?
HVAC, you can also do some major modifications on. We've just replaced a chiller in one of our buildings. We paid out $1.4 million, and out of that, we got a $167,000 rebate. But the way you can do it with your chillers, instead of putting in a 350-ton chiller, you put in two chillers of the equal amount, say 175 each tonnage, and that way you don't have to turn on a full 350 tons in order to cool a building. You can stage the cooling into stages as it gets hotter during the summer. Instead of having two on, you can have one, or if it's needed, you can switch over to the two and have the full cooling for the building. So you can do with almost anything, frankly.
So does that work so that even in the individual units, so say you have a 100-unit apartment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have these chillers. And I confess, I do not know much about the mechanicals in an apartment building in a big one. So that is controlled through the individual units, correct? And it's all tied together, I'm assuming, through computer technology now.
It would all be controlled through a BAS system, a building automation system, through the main mechanical room, usually on the roof or in a residential building. It could be located in the superintendent's suite. The chiller is a very large piece of equipment, and it's usually done through either a single or a dual pipe system. And the chiller doesn't actually feed into your suite. What feeds into your suite is the cold water or the hot water that's being delivered from the roof. And that is governed by the thermostat that's located within your suite. So if you want to save money yourselves, simply turn down your thermostat or turn up your thermostat, depending on which way you're going, in order to save money by not drawing so much work of the chiller and cooling tower itself. You can do that as a single tenant within a building, within a very large building.
And that's actually quite interesting that you're using basically a tiered system to operate the temperature of the property. Changing the element where you're splitting it up is actually quite interesting. What are some other procedures that you are using to yield the most amount of an asset?
We look for anything and everything that will drive revenue in the property. We have integrated new technology from a phone company that we're dealing with. We're working on a new deal with them in order to put fiber optics in the buildings, that sort of thing. We also look at things like we've installed a vending machine in our lobbies because we're fairly isolated here in this property, but it's easier for people to just go down to the lobby and order their food through a vending machine. It's very good food. It's high class. And they don't have to drive anywhere to get anything. And they stay in the property and they get their food delivered right in the lobby. So it's energy savings plus
dining.
You get the convenience of having it in your lobby. New BAS systems are also a big thing. Making sure that you're on DDC versus pneumatics. For your controls, there's a whole slew of things that you could do.
Okay, I have to ask because I don't know all these acronyms. What's a DDC?
Direct drive controls. They are for units located inside of the ceiling, and they have fans that automate and run the pressure and temperature that is delivered into your suites, be they one suite or many suites that you have.
Okay, so this is just actually bringing up a really interesting question for me. It's like these buildings, these apartment buildings or commercial buildings, whatever they are, very, I guess, high tech now, right? Everything, there's all kinds of systems and computer systems. How many people are actually available to operate these systems? You say, well, the building supervisor. Well, I think a lot of people have the image of a building supervisor as being somebody in a pair of overalls sitting in a little office in whatever, and probably from the 1950s or 60s or 70s. And to be honest, that's kind of what I think of when I'm thinking of building supervision. But that's just the way it is. But I think things have changed so much now. So what kind of people do this? I mean, where do you find them? Are there educational programs for them? I mean, do they get certified? I mean, this is somebody opening up a whole lot of questions for me.
Okay, so let's start with your last one about certifications. There are certifications through Seneca College, which is your BES program 1 and 2. That is directly for operators of commercial or residential buildings. You also have BOMI has an SMT program, which is again for operators, strictly for operators. And who can operate these systems? Anybody can operate these systems. I operate this system off of my telephone. So I have the BAS system uploaded to my phone, and whenever there's an alarm or something that needs to be adjusted, it goes to my operator first, it goes to my operations manager next, and then it goes to me. And if it needs to be adjusted, and I'm the one who happens to be the lucky guy to get the call, I make the adjustments and away you go. You can also do this through tablet or through a laptop or through a standalone unit. It all depends on how much money you want to spend, obviously. And how technology-driven you want to be. There are base systems out there, and then there are systems that are just, I mean, they're even beyond me. It's fantastic technology that's coming out nowadays.
With the technology kind of increasing in a huge wave of AI, are you seeing a good push in AI in the property management sector?
Not presently. I would imagine within the next 5 years, there will be big pushes in AI, probably within the mechanical systems and how they're driven through the software. You'll certainly probably see it within software programs that we currently use all the time, be it Excel, being Word, something, you know, to be able to draft letters and that sort of thing. I believe you might even see it in the legal field, actually, where it will draft documents for you based on the information that you plug in. So it will affect our industry in a lot of different ways. It's just, it's not there yet.
How long do you anticipate for it to be there?
5 years.
5 years?
Yeah, 5-year window, full implementation. I don't know where I might lose my job, probably 20. No, I'm kidding. It's, yeah, I would say a 5-year window is probably good.
So it's, well, yes, I mean, full AI maybe in 5 years, but as you said, you still need people to know what to input. I mean, we all talk about AI as it's going to take over the world, but there still is, there has to be that input of the parameters, right? What are required to run a building or anything for that matter. So I'm personally hoping that AI won't totally replace all of us in 5 years, whatever we do.
It won't. Especially now with property management, it takes intuition as well as technical knowledge in order to run a building. And you also need a personal touch. You need people to go down to their suites when they complain and ask them how they're doing. You know, the human touch is the human touch. It's like these new automated cashier machines that they have. People hate them. They absolutely hate them because you miss the human touch. And frankly, real estate is about the human touch. It's about making sure that you're okay, that you have the right environment to do your job, and that we are taking care of all the safety issues that need to be taken care of in the background to make sure that everybody is safe and the building is running properly.
That's actually a really interesting point that you bring up about the human touch. And you know, you mentioned intuition, because I think that with building managers, and really, it doesn't, you can say building managers, manager, it doesn't really matter what business you're in. But yeah, a building manager does have to talk to people. And that intuition is really important, because also, I think in a lot of cases, building managers or property managers are involved in the rental process, right? And you just because numbers work doesn't mean that person's going to work.
Mm-hmm. As far as the numbers are concerned, we drive everything for the property with regard to finances. Everything that we do, it comes through my desk. And it's my job to make sure that our budgets, our TMI, taxes, maintenance, and insurance charges that we charge back to the tenants are in line with the norms in the industry, and to make sure that we've covered off everything that we need to. It's a delicate balance. It really is a delicate balance, especially nowadays with inflation the way it was at 8%, et cetera, et cetera. But we've managed through scaling back on certain things. You can shut off your lights earlier. You can turn off your HVAC earlier if your leases allow it. There are many ways that you can cut back on costs without cutting back on service. So as I said, it's a delicate balance, because you don't want to upset the tenant base, but you also want to make sure that the principals of those tenants are getting the best bang for their.
No, it makes total sense. I can imagine it's not the easiest of jobs of what you do, you know, as a career. Like there's a lot of, I think you juggle a lot of things every single day, don't you?
Mm-hmm. It's prioritization, and that has a very large role in my life. I have to make sure that A, we're meeting all the municipal, provincial, and federal codes, but B, I also have to make sure that we are set should something come up in the property that needs to be addressed, i.e. taking a look at a parking lot. Do I really need to do a saw cut, remove, and put in new fill, or do I just do cold patch and hold for a couple of years and then we'll deal with something farther down the road and hopefully prices have gone down? That totally happened during COVID. Everybody cut back on everything. We did the same thing, as a prudent manager should, but it's a matter of prioritization, making sure that you have health and safety covered, financial considerations covered for the owner and for the tenant, and then making sure that you are on top of everything. And that is the most difficult thing. Frankly,
you know what? I was just going to ask you, what's the most difficult thing you do, but you have answered in.
It is definitely keeping track. Municipal, federal, and provincial legislation changes in a heartbeat. This implementation of net zero has been just, it's been a little crazy. People are dragging their feet, but they're now starting to move. This particular property and some properties that I also manage are going in for development for condos. So there's also that to look at. So yeah, keeping on top of all of that is a challenge. But we do.
And I would imagine that, I mean, because you've got the day-to-day operations to look after, but then you've also got to keep up to speed with everything that's going on, plus, you know, probably taking courses and just, I would think keeping current is a big enough job without actually going out and learning even more than what you currently do. Just keeping current sounds like it's a big job.
It's a huge job. Fortunately, BOMA Canada and BOMA Toronto offer fantastic courses. As does several consultants. They will offer courses in how to reduce your energy loads and how to green your property, how to green your landscaping. I mean, it's just, the list goes on and on and on. But keeping on top of all of that is you speak to a lot of people during the day and you get a lot of advice and you have a really good engineering team behind you. You're halfway there. Like, you're more than halfway there. They will keep you apprised of what's going on. Plus, you have to stick your nose out there and the industry and just ask, you know, what's the new legislation? Do I need to worry about what's new? What's the new technology? Is it ready for mass distribution, or should we wait for a little while and see how it does? If it's new, get all the kinks out and let somebody else do the dirty work. And then we come back in behind when it's all fresh and ready and pick it up. So it is what it is, this industry.
Well, you know, as you were speaking, I thought, wait a minute, in real estate in general, real estate investors, we have our power teams, right? We have the people behind us who work with us, our advisors, our consultants. And it's just, you have your own power team. You really do need that because this is not a one-person job. This is a team who goes out and manages this. And you have to depend on other people.
Mm-hmm. I'm fortunate. I work for a multinational firm with a plethora of people that I can certainly draw upon, the history of the company, as well as the knowledge base that's currently available to me, is phenomenal. I can talk to my boss, my vice president, about anything in operations. He's a brilliant man. And anything administratively, my direct boss, she's fantastic. I can't say enough about them. If they can't find the answer, they will move on up the ladder, and their boss may know the answer. So collaboration is fantastic, because you will not know the answers to all the questions that are going to come up. You simply won't. You can't. Nobody's that well in tuned with what's going on in the industry. You must ask sometimes and get direction. So, yeah.
A new curveball comes up every time, especially when you're dealing with commercial properties. You think you know it all. Until some tenant comes to you, be like, I got this problem. And you're like, I've never seen that before.
Yes. Yeah, they are inventive. I'll give you that. The way things go.
Keeps you on your toes, right? You're just going to just stay young forever because you're constantly thinking and using that brain. Okay. Speaking of keeping an eye on your toes, we're going to move to the lightning round now.
Yes.
And here we go. More questions. Andrew's going to start. So Andrew, off you go.
Roy, what is some of the best advice you got from another investor, a landlord, or someone at a networking event?
The best advice? Don't let your ego get in the way.
Good one.
A lot of people will be trepidatious about inquiring or asking, or they don't want to look like a fool because they don't want to ask a question. Ask the question. I guarantee you that somebody else in that room is thinking the same thing. Ask the question. Don't let your ego get in the way.
Super. Okay. What's a fun fact that most people wouldn't know about you?
Oh, Lordy. Geez, I don't know. A lot of people know a lot about me. Fun fact. I really don't know off the top of my head.
What wouldn't I know about you? What?
Well, you wouldn't know about me. I love sports. I love kayaking. I am huge into whitewater rafting.
You love dogs.
I do love dogs. Just have got a new puppy, a new rescue. She's the sweetest thing in the world. I like skydiving. I'm a big risk taker.
All right. Oh, wait a minute. Okay. As long as that's in your personal life and not a legit.
Work is totally different.
What would you tell your 18-year-old self if, with the information you know today?
Keep on learning. Never stop. Just absorb as much as you can along the way. When I was young, I thought I knew it all. I was very precocious. If I'd have stopped and listened to what my peers were telling me, it would have been a little less painful road going into where I am today.
Well, I think that's probably what most 18-year-olds are like, right?
Well, that I've seen, yes.
I think that's just a status quo for 18-year-olds. Okay, and last question.
Yes.
If you could travel anywhere in the world right now, where would you go?
Thailand. The country's beautiful. I have never been, but I've heard about it. I worry about the issues between Thailand and China, so I do want to see the country, hopefully before anything starts between them and China. But yeah, it would definitely be Thailand. The next one would be the Galapagos Islands. I've never been, and I am a huge nature nut. And to be able to be in that kind of environment, that kind of pristine, well, not quite pristine anymore, but as close to pristine as you can get, that kind of environment with that kind of wildlife and just be one with nature, that would definitely be my sectors.
All right, then. So thank you, Roy. It's been a fascinating conversation. I know we could talk forever. But where can people reach you? Like, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
If they want to reach me, they can reach me at my work email address, which is roy.budgell@avisonyoung.com. That's the best way.
Okay, thank you. We will have that information in the show notes, and so people can go to the website or onto any of our streaming platforms and find it. But thank you very much. So, Roy, it was a wonderful conversation. Thank you. You have a wonderful day.
Same to you.
Well, Andrew, I think Roy is extremely experienced, extremely knowledgeable, has all kinds of credentials. I mean, we just touched the surface of what he does, right?
Oh, it was some groundbreaking stuff, which I was super excited about. I've seen him work firsthand, and for him to kind of come on here and reveal his experience on how to maximize your yield on an asset is groundbreaking for me. I've always seen him in his element. So now for him to sit down and kind of sit with us and kind of break it down, I think that's amazing. And I learned a lot, even more than what he's taught me in the past. So it was a great episode.
Alrighty. So until next time, everyone, go out and customize your life. Bye for now.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Right Club Podcast, where the focus is on helping all levels of real estate investors advance to the next level and help you customize your life. Be sure to tune in next week at rightclub.com/podcast or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you get a few seconds, please rate the podcast wherever you're listening. It helps the show get noticed by others like you, and we truly appreciate it. And don't forget to subscribe.